Hello, I'm joined by Professor Tetsuo Hatsuda from the Riken Institute in Japan. It's one of the largest research institutes over there, and they do all sorts of interdisciplinary research from things like fish to graphene to quantum chromodynamics. We've just listened to a really interesting talk from quarks to neutron stars. So hello to Professor Tetsuo Hatsuda.
Hello, nice to see you.
Hi, and I'm joined by Luke, who's taken a lot of interest in this talk.
Hello.
And we've got some questions for you.
Yeah, okay.
So if you wanted to start off and just tell us a little bit about your interest in quarks and neutron stars.
I mean, the quarks are the elementary particles, which are the basic building blocks of matter, and then our bodies are made of quark. So how the quarks interact with each other, and then how our body is made of quarks is my interest. And then, of course, we can discuss that problem theoretically and also experimentally, but also in neutron stars, inside the neutron stars, I mean, the quarks get together and then form a exotic, very interesting state of matter. It may happen deep inside the neutron star. Therefore, that is also my interest. And then eventually that kind of thing could be studied from the observation in astrophysics. So that excites me very much.
So could you possibly give the listeners a brief on the structure of the neutron star?
Okay.
And the interesting physics going on.
Yeah. So neutron star is a very interesting object that the radius is about 10 kilometer, but the mass is about the mass of the sun. So just imagine that if you compress the sun into the radius of the 10 kilometer, that is a neutron star. So it's a very dense object, but still it's very spherical. And then inside you have a liquid. It's called a neutron liquid. And then the outer side of the neutron star, it is solid. So you have a solid container, and inside you have a neutron liquid. And it's rotating very fast. Therefore, it's a very interesting astronomical object. There are so many neutron stars discovered inside our galaxy, so it's a very interesting object to be studied.
So a lot of your research, Professor, is centered around quantum chromodynamics, mm-hmm. the study of strongly interacting particles.
Yes, yes.
So how does quantum chromodynamics link to the structure of a neutron star?
Yeah. So the quantum chromodynamics is the theory for quarks. And then as I told you that our body is made of quarks, but in the neutron stars, everything is compressed. Therefore, eventually, and the outer side is an ordinary matter, but inside you have a very compressed matter of quarks. And then you may have some new type of matter, which we don't see in the daily life. And that kind of exotic matter is very interesting to me to study.
So we know about that there are these interesting states of matter that happen inside neutron stars.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any way of measuring that observationally? Like we have to rely on theory?
Yeah. In astrophysics, what you can measure is, say, the mass, the weight of the neutron star, or the radius of the neutron star, or the outer magnetic field of the neutron star. All those kind of things can be, in principle, measured. And therefore, from these observations, you have to somehow try to understand the internal structure. That's a very difficult, thing to do. But still, by combining the observation and the calculation based on quantum chromodynamics, you may be able to eventually have some contact of the quarks with the internal structure of the neutron star. So that's the relation.
So you said that the neutron star, as a loose model, is composed of this liquid, and then on the outside you have this solid.
Yes.
Is there anything interesting going on the inside, particularly with respect to the liquid of the neutron star?
So as far as liquid are concerned, if you have a liquid, neutron liquid, and then it's a quantum liquid, and then usually it becomes a superfluid. So it's not only just a liquid, but it's a quantum superfluid. And if you have a superfluid inside neutron star, and then normally the neutron star is rotating, in that case you have vortices inside the neutron stars, and that vortices have some interesting structure. They have typically it's a micro size, 10 to the minus 13 or minus 12 centimeter size, but the number of vortices are very large inside the neutron stars, and then they may have some collective effect, like glitch of the neutron star, which is a phenomena that the spinning neutron star becomes suddenly spin up and then coming down. That kind of thing is measured in astrophysics, and that kind of thing is related to the internal structure and maybe related to this vortices dynamics.
So with respect to the interesting stuff that's happening inside the inner core, how close can we get to recreating those conditions in a laboratory?
That's a good question. And then actually there are lots of activities of having heavy ion collisions. And then especially the relatively low energy heavy ion collisions, you collide two heavy nuclei, and then in the intermediate state of the collision, you may have some compressed matter, and then that density becomes comparable to the density of the neutron star, I mean, internal state of the neutron star. Therefore, you may be able to see some experimental evidence of this compressed matter properties from this low energy heavy ion collisions. And then there are several laboratories trying to do this kind of experiment in the future, in Japan and also in Germany too.
You can start to begin to probe that regime in laboratories, mm-hmm. but would you say that most of the information we have on these states of matter comes from astrophysical observation?
Yeah, so far, yes. Yeah. Yes.
So what were the kind of turning moments in the history of understanding neutron stars?
A turning moment?
Yeah, any kind of big important discoveries that we've made over the years.
Ah, okay. So one important discovery one would expect is the neutron star collision. And then we have already a black hole merger and a gravitational wave emitted from the black hole merger. And then maybe in a few years, we may have a similar gravitational wave emission from the neutron star merger. And by detecting this signal, you may be able to extract the radius and then eventually some density of the neutron star inside and so on and so forth. So that would be one of the most biggest event in this subject, I think, in a few years. I hope it will happen in a few years. And then people expect that it will happen in a few years.
So just to recap, we've gone through this neutron star and all the different physics, crazy physics going on inside, mm-hmm. the superfluid neutrons, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and the possibility of this exotic matter at the middle. Could you possibly explain to us what sort of physics and what's happening between the two regimes? So what's going on between the neutrons mm-hmm. and uh-huh. this sort of exotic okay. like quark matter?
So there are several stages. And then one stage is that the first outer side, you have solid of the nuclear solid. And then, and because inside the neutron star, the pressure becomes larger and larger if you go inside. And then because of the large pressure, the matter starts to melt. And then eventually, a nuclear melt, and then it becomes the neutron liquid. And then if you have a larger pressure further inside a neutron star, then even the neutron start to melt into quarks. And then eventually at the center of the neutron star, you may have some quark matter, which is where quarks are floating around. Usually the quarks are confined inside the neutrons or protons, but deep inside the neutron star, quarks may be freed. That is called the deconfinement of quarks, and that may happen. And so there are several different stages from outer side to the inner side, and then those kind of things may happen.
One thing that you mentioned during the talk that I thought was quite a nice touching point that people might relate to is that there is some relationship between the physics that you're looking at inside mm-hmm. these neutron stars and what the Nobel Prize that was mm-hmm. won this year. Mm-hmm. Could you talk a bit about the yeah. crossover between those fields?
Okay. So Nobel Prize this year is originally from this, as far as I remember, 73 paper by Kostaritz and Saules. And then they have talked about the topological object called the so-called the vortex. And then some matter may have some phase change from the one phase to the other phase because of the dynamics of the vortices. And this is called a topological phase transition. And then similar kind of vortices would appear, and probably it should appear inside the neutron stars, because neutron star, as I said, internal structure of the neutron star, you have a neutron liquid and it's superfluid. Therefore, you have lots of vortices. So inside the neutron star, there are lots of vortices exist. And then the interaction between vortices may also give you some sort of the phase change from one phase to the other. That kind of thing may happen. So that is the connection. And so topology is a key word which connect this year's Nobel Prize and neutron star vortices.
Yeah, that's really interesting.
One thing that I find quite interesting is the this thing that you're speaking about regarding the gravitational waves emitted from the black hole merger. Just for the benefit of the people who don't know, how much weaker or stronger would gravitational waves emitted from a neutron star collision be in comparison to black hole?
So it depends on the mass right. Of the object. And then the gravitational wave observed the last year from Advanced LIGO detector is that it's a rather heavy black hole, something like 30 times the solar mass. So because it was heavy, you have a large amplitude of the gravitational wave from the very far from Earth. And the neutron star mass is typically 1 to 2 solar mass. Mm. So the typically, if they are in the same distance, essentially the mass determines the amplitude of the gravitational wave. Therefore, you cannot have a very strong gravitational wave from the neutron star merger because neutron star mass is limited mm-hmm. up to 2 or something. But on the other hand, the neutron star merger has very interesting signal because neutron star has a structure. So depending on the size of the neutron star, the gravitational wave pattern is different. Therefore, by measuring the gravitational wave pattern from neutron star merger, you may be able to extract or constrain the size of the neutron star. And eventually that is related to the internal structure of the neutron star. So that kind of connection is very interesting in the case of the neutron star merger.
So what questions do you hope to answer when you get these observations? So firstly, I should ask, isn't a device like LIGO sensitive enough to pick up these events?
Yes.
And also, what will you hope to learn from?
Yeah, there are three detectors. One is Advanced LIGO, and then other is Advanced Virgo, and then the third one is Kagura in Japan. And then they will have some full operation in a few years. And then if they start to measure this gravitational wave, then current estimate is that within few years, at least you can find one or two gravitational waves from neutron star merger. So they have a good sensitivity. So their estimate is correct, then they will be able to find some neutron star merger signal not far away from now. So,
okay, so that's something to look out for in the next few years.
Yes.
Do you think there's anything more interesting or weird or wacky that could be at the center of a neutron star?
So even more exotic.
Yeah.
The very exotic thing is this dark matter. If you have a lot of dark matter, and then this will be accumulated because of the large gravity of the neutron star. And then for a long time, if you accumulate all this dark matter inside the neutron star, then neutron star mass becomes heavier and heavier. And at some certain point, it goes over to the critical point and then goes to the black hole. So accumulation of the dark matter into the center of the neutron star may drive the transition from the neutron star to the black hole. That kind of thing has been discussed by several people. So that is, I think, one of the most exotic, interesting thing. Connection between dark matter and then neutron star.
So it's a far-reaching field then.
Yeah.
One thing I was going to ask about that you didn't really get time to talk about during the talk we saw was about hyperons. So inside a neutron star, you have more exotic types of quark, right? Other than just the usual up-down types. So could you tell us a little bit about that, why that happens and maybe why it's interesting?
Yeah. So if, again, if you go to the central part of the neutron star, then not only up and down quarks, but you have another quark called a strange quark, which may appear. Because if you have only up and down, then the kinetic energy of these up and down quarks becomes larger and larger as you increase the density of the system. Then it is easier or better to convert this U and D quark, up and down quarks, to strange quark. That makes this full kinetic energy smaller. Therefore, it's energetically favorable to have a strange quark instead of just having a up and down quark. But once you have strange quark, then total energy becomes smaller. Therefore, equation of state, which controls the state of the matter, becomes soft, and then neutron star can be easily compressed. And then the maximum mass of the neutron star becomes smaller than the twice the mass of the sun. That contradicts with the observation which we have now. Therefore, there is a puzzle. It's called a hyperon puzzle. Theoretically, it's better to have strange quark inside neutron star. But once you have strange quark inside neutron star, then it has some contradiction with the observation. Therefore, something is wrong. And then that is the open question, and it's one of the most interesting unsolved question in this community right now.
So you mentioned there the equation of state that was inside, and it becomes softer.
Yes.
Right? So by that, we're talking about the kind of mass-radius relationship that you were talking about during the talk, where as you pile on more mass to the neutron star, you can reach a sort of critical radius. Could you explain a little bit about that?
If the equation of state is soft, then you can easily compress. And therefore, typically the radius becomes smaller. On the other hand, if the equation of state is hard, then you cannot easily compress. The radius is typically large. And also, if the equation of state is soft, then if you put more mass, and then eventually it collapses into the black hole very fast. So the maximum mass of the neutron star becomes smaller for a soft equation of state, and then larger for the stiff equation of state. So radius is smaller, and the maximum mass is smaller for a soft equation of state. Radius is larger, maximum mass is larger for a stiff equation of state. Mm-hmm. So there is such kind of difference. And then theoretically, we don't know yet whether equation of state is really soft or hard. But at least we have to explain two solar mass observation, and then you need to have some certain stiffness. Two soft equation of state can be ruled out by the observation already.
So one of the concepts that you've been through with us is the idea of these vortices perpetuating through the superfluid.
Yes.
Okay. Now, this might be a little bit harder to explain easily, but what happens to those vortices when they go into this proposed quark superfluid?
Yeah.
What sort of physics goes on there
if
we've got these objects, these vortices going around in our superfluid, but then they must interact with the quarks as well?
Yeah, right? That's right. Yeah.
So what happens there? Could you explain this to
us? Yeah. So if you have only neutrons superfluid, then you have, suppose you have single vortex, and then if it enters into the quark phase, theoretically the quark phase is also superfluid, which we can show. Therefore, the single vortex in neutron superfluid becomes three vortices in quark superfluid. So single vortex becomes split into the three vortices inside quark superfluid. So that kind of a strange structure, the bifurcation of a single vortex into the three would happen at the interface between the neutron superfluid and quark superfluid. And that kind of thing may happen inside the neutron star too.
So the sort of, if I understand correctly, that's because if you've got a vortex in a collection of neutrons, when those neutrons are split into their constituent quarks, there are three quarks making up the neutron, right? So it effectively splits the vortex three ways.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. Essentially, that is a right picture. Yes.
So there must be some really interesting dynamics going on amongst those quarks.
Yeah.
For there to be, for every neutron going through that phase transition, if there's three different vortices coming out, that must be.
That's right. Yes.
I wouldn't want to simulate that.
It's going to get messy.
Yes.
So speaking of simulations, it was mentioned that your facility has some of the most advanced high-performance computing tech in the world. What kind of simulations are you running there?
So we have in RIKEN so-called a K computer, and K means the 10 petaflops in Japanese. So 10 petaflops machine in RIKEN. So we use that machine to calculate the nucleon-nucleon or nucleon-hyperon interactions by using so-called lattice QCD simulations. And then it is a very tough calculation. And then to really get one result, we spent almost 2 years. It's essentially the Monte Carlo integration, but you have so many degrees of freedom. Therefore, this kind of integration is very difficult. And then by using this supercomputer, we took 2 years to get some result. And then now we are still making some further calculation to increase statistics and so on and so forth.
And this is all related to that kind of quark confinement issue that we were talking about.
That's right. Yeah. Quark confinement, and also how this confined quarks interaction between protons and neutrons in terms of the quark degrees of freedom. So quarks are confined inside neutrons and protons. But the next question is how the neutrons and protons, which has quarks inside, interact with each other. That is another question, which is even more complicated question. And then that takes time.
But there's a $1 million on the line if you get it right.
Well, yeah, but it's still a numerical calculation. And then I think mathematicians will not accept that it is a proof. It's not a mathematical proof. It's plausible, I mean.
So just to fill the listeners in, this was part of the Clay Institute set of mathematical challenges where each one of them, I think there are seven.
Seven problems.
Yeah, and there's a bounty of $1 million available if you can provide a full worked mathematical solution.
Yes.
But I'm guessing they only want analytical solutions.
Analytical solutions, not numerical, I think.
So Yang-Mills mass gap.
Yang-Mills mass gap.
Listeners,
is the,
get on that one.
Yes.
Go and get that if you want $1 million.
Get to work, listeners. Answers on a postcard, please.
It's a fancy way. Yang-Mills mass gap is a fancy way to say confinement of quarks.
So just so I can sort of get in my head the scale, what is a petaflop? What is that?
Petaflop is
the,
so when you do calculations, you add or subtract or those kind of the basic operations. One petaflop means 10 to the 15 operations per second.
Right. Okay.
That is a petaflops. So 10 petaflops means 10 to the 16 operations plus or minus or something like that per second. So it's a very fast.
So doing that continuously for 2 years is an awful lot of calculation.
Yeah, not continuously 2 years, but I mean, because there are other people using this computer
So
we have to split, but still it took 2 years for us to.
So RIKEN seems like a really interesting place. What other kind of work are you doing over there?
I'm heading the interdisciplinary theoretical science research group that contains physics, chemistry, and then biology. And then they are all theorists. So we are getting together once a week on Friday, and then all physicists, chemists, and the biologists, they're all theorists, but we have some lunch together, and then we discuss the recent problems and so on and so forth. And then during these discussions, sometimes biologists propose some interesting problem to physicists, and then physicists are interested in, and they started to solve this problem in a mathematical way or in some other way. So there are several, already five or six collaborations started between physicists, chemists, and then biologists. And then I'm involved in one of them, and that is a fish retina problem. And then in fish retina, there is a very nice pattern of the photoreceptor cells, especially this zebra fish, medaka fish. They have some very interesting, beautiful pattern. And how these patterns are formed has been unsolved problem since 19th century, because they knew it from 19th century, but they couldn't solve it. Why they have that kind of pattern? And then somehow we can map that problem to the statistical spin model, which is usually used in physics, and then eventually we could solve that problem recently. So that kind of discussion drives a very interesting problem solving.
Really cool. That's brilliant. What a great way of doing science.
Yeah, that's right.
Nice. Cool. So have you got any other interesting projects that you might be producing results from in the near future?
Oh, in this collaboration, interdisciplinary collaboration?
Or in any collaboration?
Just anything that's coming up from out of your office in the next coming months?
Yeah. From the physics point of view, we would like to pursue further this calculation of this hyperon-nucleon interaction, or hyperon-hyperon interaction, which is very important for the neutron star structure, by using the lattice QCD simulations. There is also a very interesting interaction between the condensed matter physicist and then particle and the nuclear physicist, because some common notion can explain both the particle physics problem and the condensed matter physics problem. And that kind of thing often happens. So we are going to that direction too. And then my own interest right now is still biophysics a problem other than this QCD stuff. And then there are many interesting problems, how the complex network in biology can be analyzed in a mathematical way that can be done together with the mathematical biologist. And that is very interesting.
Brilliant. Me.
Yes.
Great. Professor Tetsuo Hatsuda, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. It's my great pleasure to be here.
Brilliant.
Thank you.